All across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. Real information, good conversation, unabashedly Wisconsin. Here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
And welcome back to the second hour of Up North News for this Wednesday. Coming up this hour, former state treasurer Sarah Godlewski talks about her new endeavor to highlight and amplify women serving in public service roles around Wisconsin, something we hope she'll be doing with us on a regular basis. Also, a friend of mine, Barron County Pastor Ned Lenhart, with a twist on New Year's resolutions, all about looking inside ourselves and starting 2023 on the right foot spiritually. And we'll talk to Todd Alba to wrap up the hour as well. If you'd like to reach us, 844-967-2789. The line up north is 715-388-7155. And you can email us radio@upnorthnewswi.com. There are some new documents out that detail Senator Ron Johnson and the plot by Donald Trump and friends to set up slates of fake electors and then fraudulently affect the counting of electoral votes on January 6th, 2021. The former chair of the Wisconsin Republican Party, Andrew Hitt, said that Senator Ron Johnson spoke to him weeks before Joe Biden assumed the presidency about having the legislature, rather than voters, choose Wisconsin's presidential electors. That's part of a trove of newly released documents of closed-door testimony to the January 6th committee. Johnson, for his part, yesterday put out a statement saying he has no such recollection of a conversation with Andrew Hitt. And furthermore, Johnson says this is all part of the January 6th committee attempting to smear him by selectively releasing text messages. The Johnson statement says, "I have no recollection of the phone call that's referenced in the text, and therefore do not know the context of any comment I might have made. My goal since the November 2020 elections has consistently been to restore confidence in our election system," which is not true. The only way to restore confidence would be to destroy that confidence in the first place, which has not been destroyed by actual evidence of actual fraud, but by people like Ron Johnson saying, "Well, I'm just raising some questions about the possibility of things that did not actually happen." Hitt resigned as state party chair in July 2021. He testified back in February before the January 6th committee, and the transcript of his interview was released on Monday. Andrew Hitt did not respond to messages left by the Associated Press yesterday seeking any comment. He had provided the committee with a text message that he sent to Mark Jefferson, the executive director of the Wisconsin Republican Party, on December 7th of 2020. That was the week before Wisconsin's real electors met to cast their votes for Biden, who had defeated, then President Trump by nearly 21,000 votes. Republicans were discussing ways around having the state's electors rightfully awarded to Biden. Hitt's text message to Jefferson said, "Ron," meaning Johnson, "called me and now is arguing for us to have the legislature choose the electors. OMG. Jefferson replied, "What is he doing?" Hitt responds, "There is a huge amount of pressure building on them to find a way around the electoral college." Jefferson, "How can he feel good about promoting that, though? Does he believe we won here?" Those are stunning text messages. That is the chair of the state Republican Party saying there's a huge amount of pressure building to find a way around the Electoral College. And then the executive director of the state Republicans responds, "How can he feel good promoting that, though? Does he believe we won here?" And we already know Johnson knows that Trump didn't win. He said as much to the then Brown County Republican Party chair, who has talked to us here on Up North News Radio about that conversation. Hitt told the January 6th committee He opposed having the legislature award electoral votes, that he didn't think Republican legislators would do it. And he told Johnson that attorneys for the legislature had weighed in and said lawmakers didn't have the power to do that. But I think that that's putting more faith in Republican legislators than they've really earned. I think that if the circumstances had allowed the legislature to have a chance to steal the election and award Wisconsin's electors to Trump, they would have done it. The way that would have happened is if Mike Pence had gone along with the scheme, if on January 6th in that joint session of Congress, if he saw the fake slate of electors that Ron Johnson was minutes away from possibly delivering to Pence, if Pence had said, well, I see that there are two slates of electors from Wisconsin and other states, and so I'm going to adjourn this session and kick this back to state legislatures to decide who should win the electors. Don't think for a minute the Republican-led Wisconsin legislature would respect the will of the voters. They would claim that there was some kind of hanky-panky that they couldn't prove because it didn't exist, and then award Wisconsin's electors to Trump. That is absolutely how it would have played out. But Ron Johnson's here to tell you that he doesn't remember that, and it all must be a smear, like when the FBI tried to smear him by saying, don't be a Russian stooge. We'll talk to Pastor Ned Lenhart next, and then Sarah Godlewski at the bottom of the hour on Up North News Radio.
When you have a political party that has no problem lying, where they figure the end justifies the means, unfortunately, that has an impact in politics.
Yeah, Ron, we know. Well, this segment here is something that isn't exactly, like all good things, going according to plan, because my good friend Pastor Ned Lenhart and I were going to talk prior to Christmas and take some time before the holidays to talk about the significance of the holidays, how we can bring a sense of peace and calm and introspection to the holidays instead of getting caught up in the hustle and the bustle and the chaos and the illnesses from cold and flu season and the bad weather. And guess what? Bad weather, illnesses, family matters, holidays, and vacations all got in the way. And so Ned and I did not get a chance to talk on the radio prior to Christmas, but I still thought it would be great to have him come on. And he, in fact, is working on a new series for his church, Living Water, up in Cameron, about starting the new year off on a good spiritual note. So, Ned, thanks for your patience and all the waiting. Good morning, happy new year, and nice to see you.
Thank you. Good to be with you. This is my first time doing anything like this, so you're the lead. I will follow.
That's not exactly true. And what I mean by that is Ned's actually a bit of a trailblazer when it came to, even before the pandemic, he was leading the way in what you would call digital church, in that there were times when he and another pastor in Chippewa Falls would sit in a room and kind of videotape some of their messages to the congregation. And then when COVID hit, Living Water in Cameron was, that support crew you have back there is masterful in putting a service on online when there was nobody in the pews, but you were still there able to talk to the entire congregation scattered wherever we were.
Well, Pat, do you want to go back to that story? Because it is really a fun story to tell.
Yeah,
we had a vision up in Living Water in Cameron because we're up in the middle of the North Woods and we're surrounded by a lot of smaller churches that many of them really struggle to find a spiritual leadership, to find a pastor, a deacon, what have you. And we had this vision. And the idea was that we would put together a production studio in our church that we could capture a sermon, capture a worship service, and then put it up in the cloud so that people in little churches could access a small amount or a large amount or anything in between that they needed for their church, especially when they did not have a pastor in-house. So say your pastor has been with you for 7, 8, 9 years and decides to move on. You go out into the world, try to find a pastor and realize, oh, there's just like everywhere we go in the world, we see now hiring signs. Church is no different. We are, it doesn't matter your denomination, your affiliation, it's a struggle to find a pastor. And we thought, well, we can have this resource available. So just those years, the 2 years prior to the pandemic, that's what we were working on to get up and running, to have a good model to be able to stream out to congregations.
So. And it's really telling and a good reminder that pastors, priests, all leaders of congregations and flocks around the world, we like to think of them as just being focused on a message. But you and others also have to look at the infrastructure of conveying that message. And sometimes it changes with the times.
Oh, yeah, it definitely does. And the infrastructure we put in place actually was just for us as a faith institution. It was like this God-given gift that we had. We were able then, when the pandemic came, to give our stream to a lot of other small churches, especially those who had never streamed before. I mean, now we think about live streaming, what we're doing right now, and that's a pretty common thing. But back then, the idea of, for most, even a medium-sized church to just have a regular streaming presence wasn't really on their radar screen. So when the pandemic hit, not only could we give them our stream, we could also give them tech support too, which we did. We had tech people who would listen in, help them get their stream clearer, help them, for many of us, it was a matter of which way do you hold the iPhone on the tripod when you're doing the Facebook live stream for the first time. And there was more than one congregation where everything was like 45 or 90 degrees off. It wasn't quite right, but
it's true. I did a story for Up North News for our website back then in those early weeks of the pandemic, showing the many different ways that churches with varying degrees of success were having to move into live streaming of their services. And I've admitted to you to being torn because I like others really enjoy being around folks on Sundays and being in a place that brings you calm and peace. But during the pandemic, there was also something kind of comforting about just being able to watch it in your PJs while you're having your French toast and you prop up your tablet on the table and watch things. And I definitely look at it both ways now, that now if you can't make it to church, you also don't have a reason to skip it. There's another way to be part of it without being physically there.
Right. Well, and that is kind of the rub, the pull, the whatever you want to call it for churches, for church leaders these days, is now that we have gotten people used to a live stream experience, that's not going away. I mean, it's not a question of either or. It's now both and creating some kind of hybrid experience so that the people who belong to a church or want to connect to a church, they can do it either by going physically to that site or they could do it online. And the bigger challenge for us as church leaders is saying, how can we make that an exceptional experience for both groups, because some people have their feet in both camps. Many people have their feet in both camps. Maybe you could even say most, that if they can't make it, they do that online. And then to say, for those folks out there, how do we treat them as people, not as just watchers or viewers, but as people with needs, who want prayers, who want to be involved in a mission project, who want to give an offering, who want to grow in their faith. And that's a whole new mindset going in post pandemic now.
Yeah, very much so. Well, in covering all that, I've whittled this down to giving us our only 5 minutes to talk about your message series for starting off the year. But it is something that you and other pastors work on this time of year. You're always working off a calendar, which is rather static. We know when Christmas is going to be, or Easter, or what have you. And the same goes for New Year's Day. And a lot of people are very hard on themselves at the start of the year with resolutions and things like that. So I found it interesting when you said you were looking for ways to help people start the new year off, more spiritually and more with that sense of purpose, and not just, I got to eat less and exercise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you know, for us at in Church World, one of the things that we do, because we are a church that uses message series, so that we look at the year and say, what kind of series do people need throughout the year, and kind of lay that on top of the liturgical calendar. So in Church World, things start out not January 1st, actually, but more closer to December 1st. That's Advent. You have 4 weeks of Advent. Then there's Christmas, Epiphany, the season of light, which leads into Lent. We all know about Lent from fish fries and fish boils and the midweek Lenten services, soup and supper, soup and sandwich suppers, that kind of thing. And then Easter, and then after Easter, the Sundays of Pentecost. So that's always a given for us. You know, at Living Water, one of the things that we try really hard to do is for people who are coming back to church after Christmas, who really want to start off the year well, who have, like all of us do, I think, we have good intentions. We want to have the best year possible. Yet, as we all know with intentions, they only go so far. So that first message series for me in January, which would be right now, is how do we craft a series that really grabs hold of their intentions and their hopes and helps them get an idea of how I could actually make this happen. So for us, this first series, I always look at it as, okay, I've got roughly 4 weeks to say, here are some tools that you can use in order to identify what it is you want to achieve. You know, what are the values that you hold dearly in your family, in your heart, that are just must-haves for you? And then with those values kind of laid out there, how do you then identify 1, 2, 3, 4 goals to make that happen throughout the year? And then along with that, not just giving them the tools, but giving them the connections with the larger community so that they're not going it alone. Because we all know if we're going to make change, change requires resources, it requires good intentions, and it requires support. You really need to have somebody along with you. So how do we connect you with other people who want to have a great year and who are heading the same direction as you, so that you can be cheerleaders for each other? You can, you know, cheer each other on and lift each other up and, you know, say, hey, don't give up, make it happen.
It's so important to note that in this digital age, we're more connected than ever. And yet that also leaves us the potential to be more isolated than ever, as we're all just, you know, literally phoning in from home by ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And so this series, it's titled I'm In. And what we're doing is inviting people to take a deeper step in their relationship with God, to say, okay, you know, maybe I've been a little bit on the sidelines for a while, especially with COVID. Maybe I've been just kind of isolating, doing my own thing. How can I do a better job of connecting up with others so that my engagement is deeper, my investment is greater, so that I really take that next step that maybe I've been holding back on? So just saying, hey, you know what? Letting everybody know you're all invited. There's nobody who's not invited into God's invitation of grace and mercy. Everybody is welcome. That includes you. And now that now that you can take that to heart, what will be my next step? How can I identify those 1, 2, 3 things, areas where I want to grow in my faith this year? So that's where we're headed for the next week. Our message series actually kicks off this coming Sunday. So that'll be what, the 8th, I think? Yeah. So we start the 8th, and we'll be looking at that and walking folks through that, helping them connect with others, identify their have-tos. And yeah, looking forward to it. That's always exciting.
If folks want to watch this, they can go to the Living Water Church website from Cameron, and the website is livingwatercameron.org, where you can watch the live stream either through Facebook or YouTube and see what else Pastor Ned Lenhart has to say. It's so good to talk to you. Thanks for coming on, and look forward to maybe doing a little update on this and helping people stay connected throughout the year. Thanks, Ned.
Love to. Thanks.
All right. Well, now that we've talked about, helping lift yourself or look into yourself, let's talk about lifting others. Sarah Godlewski is going to be doing that with women across Wisconsin now that her time as state treasurer is done. And so we will visit with her coming up right after the break. This is Up North News Radio.
Follow Up North News online anytime. Search Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter for Up North News WI and our homepage, upnorthnewswi.com.
This is for all the mothers fighting, yeah, for better days to come.
All right, Alicia Keys gets us into this segment here where we're going to visit with Sarah Godlewski, who served as Wisconsin State Treasurer for the past 4 years and now is moving on to new chapters in life and is going to help us elevate and amplify some very deserving voices around Wisconsin as we head into 2023. But first, we've got to talk to her about, you know, the festivities involved in stepping away from state office and the holidays and everything else. Sarah, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Well, I'll tell you, there's no better way, I think, to start my first day of unemployment here, Pat, as, you know, 11, when the clock hit noon yesterday is when I officially was no longer the state treasurer, but being at those inauguration festivities yesterday and watching Governor Reivers, I mean, I think I counted at least 5 times he talked about reproductive rights and reproductive freedom and how important that is to clean drinking water. And it was really inspirational, but it was a bit bittersweet as I am moving on.
Oh, absolutely. But, you know, again, you have to have that sense of accomplishment that goes into this, you know, starting first and foremost with saving the state treasurer's office from Republican efforts to take away a constitutional role in the state.
Yeah. I mean, when I found out that Scott Walker was trying to get rid of the state treasurer's office, which first of all was very kind of, I wasn't looking for this. How it happened is prior to being state treasurer, I was involved in startups here in Wisconsin and how we can really support our small businesses. And a program that I saw across the state where these state treasurers were using their investment dollars to help our small business community. Oh, state, wow, what a concept, economic development. So I reached out to our state treasurer because I thought, okay, I'm going to give them a call and maybe I can help them do this. Like, we're clearly not doing that here in Wisconsin at the level that we should. We were 50th for startup funding. The state treasurer, Pat, never called me back, never returned my emails. And now here we are. I found myself then leading this constitutional amendment and where we took a supermajority. And then after that, it was like, well, who's going to run for this office? And stepped up and I'm like, let's do this.
So you did. And how do you feel, you know, it went compared to your goals coming into that office for the first time?
Well, let's just take that first reason why I even found out about the state treasurer's office is just investing in Wisconsin. I mean, under my tenure, we invested over $300 million in Wisconsin. We financed over 600 projects across the state. And while this was, you know, helping a program in Middleton, Wisconsin with small businesses, we expanded that to even doing things like access to broadband, removing lead laterals in communities across the state, to financing fire trucks. And so it was a very kind of broad work, but I thought all of it was important. And it wasn't just investing in Wisconsin. Let's talk about our public schools, Pat. I mean, you and I are both products of Wisconsin public schools. And every single year, we had record-breaking distributions. Last year, 1 year, our distribution increased by 27%. Even when the economy wasn't great, we were still able to increase that distribution to our public schools significantly.
You talked about putting an emphasis on small business, and I want to come back to that for a second because of a theme that I've tried to remind listeners of repeatedly, is that while Scott Walker and Republicans were going for the all eggs in one basket Foxconn mega project approach, I remember at the time saying, can you imagine if we took that money and actually just divided it amongst 72 counties for, you know, hometown business, economic development? And that's what Governor Evers has been doing now with these bounce back grants. And it really seems, when you talk about the differences between parties, I think one that people don't think about, but really should, is that one party is pretty well exclusively focused on big business, and another one is focused more on your hometown entrepreneurs.
Yeah, and we know that a 90%+ of our economy is on small business. I mean, it is the mom and pop shops. It is these smaller, hometown companies that are the ones that are really the lifeline to our communities. And, hats off to Governor Evers. He could have just put all of the money in one big basket, like Scott Walker did, and failed miserably, but he was really thoughtful and ensuring that, it's not just one part of the state, it's the entire state that can benefit from these funds.
We're talking to Sarah Godlewski, formerly served as state treasurer, who's now taking on some new endeavors. And to that end, you have met, it seems like an unending line of women who have chosen to get involved either in their hometown businesses as entrepreneurs or in public service. And as you and I were talking recently, one theme that emerged was that these are people whose stories deserve to be told, whose voices deserve to be lifted, not just at election time, if they decide to step up and run for something. We've had people who get national press when they decide to run, against all the odds in a very red state assembly district. But, throughout the course of the year, and with you knowing as many people as you do, I really have to admire your willingness to, through your PAC, Women Win Wisconsin, and through other private endeavors, that you want to help bring some of those stories to light over the course of the next year or two.
Well, I think, in particular, we always knew that this was an issue, right? That we need to do everything we can to raise women's voices, whether it is the work that they are doing in their communities. It could be a nonprofit that they have started to help address childhood hunger, to the work they're doing in the medical field and helping women get access to abortion care. I mean, there are so many women that are doing amazing things, but people don't always know about these things, Pat. And I think that's what I'm so excited about. This new feature is helping to elevate those voices and those stories. I mean, I even think about my own experience, Pat. Everyone's like, what does the state treasurer do? And Sarah, what are you doing? And I will be like, oh, we just had this public hearing on a 401 kids program that's going to provide every kid a childhood savings account. And they're like, how do I not know about this? And so I think what I'm excited about is to bring these stories to your listeners and let them know about all the good things that women are doing across our state.
Well, and again, these are folks who may not necessarily ever do anything political, but it's about their own local leadership. Maybe they start as an entrepreneur, and maybe it moves on to their local chamber of commerce, or helping out with their local economic development group, or serving on a school board or whatever the case may be. Not everybody ends up running for state office, like you or yeah, Congress like me, but it's the things that get done on the local level that, I think we just want to make sure that people know there are always opportunities to serve locally and to do, to be something bigger.
Right. And I just think about all of the incredible women that I have met over the last few years. And a lot of times it just happens to be that they see this need. As I mentioned, I was talking to one woman and there was an issue about childhood hunger in her community. And rather than trying to wait for somebody to do something about it, she's like, I'm just going to stand up and do it. And I think we just hear that another woman, there was no bilingual preschools. And so students who were speaking Spanish, it was really hard for them. But at the same time, she wanted other kids to learn Spanish so they could engage with their neighbors. So she just started a bilingual preschool. Because she's like, I'm just not going to wait for somebody to ask me to do this. I'm just going to do it. And I think that's so incredible to hear these stories and what makes women tick and why they did this.
And then we to again be very well-rounded in this, there are women, there are plenty of folks who choose to get involved, but they choose to get involved from a conservative aspect, a right-wing aspect, a Republican aspect, you know, what have you. And we're certainly going to see that over the next several weeks here, once again with school board elections, for example, where you have groups like ones called Moms for Liberty, where people are going to talk a lot about parental control or local control. But in fact, that's really just kind of an apple pie term to hide a, you know, kind of an extreme right wing agenda. And that's something I know that you're going to be keeping your eye on over these next few weeks.
Well, something that I am continuing to do, Pat, is our organization called Women Win Wisconsin. And it is exactly that. It is focusing on important races. One of them that we have found is that there are these Moms for Liberty groups that are popping up all over Wisconsin. And they start joining these local PTA Facebooks and they make it seem like, you know, there's just your next door mom who's going to be hanging out and want to take your kids together to the playground. When you actually look under the hood, as my dad would say, you got to lift it up and look what's actually in that car. They, you know, their agenda stands for things like banning books. And they want to make sure if there's another outbreak for some unknown reason of COVID, you don't want to mask your kids, like going against the science. And so to me, I think we need to do everything we can to be recruiting great candidates, great women, and be countering these Moms for Liberty groups.
It's a group that's only now getting recognition from the, not just the positive recognition of the people that they seek, but recognition from those who are saying, hey, you need to know about this group. This is a group that has been advocating for book bans, has been advocating for classroom censorship, to ban the teaching about slavery and race and racism, and obviously as well fighting against having any recognition of diversity and celebrating LGBTQ people and their own history. And again, these things are going to come up under the guise of parental rights when it really is just a, you know, right-wing partisanship by a different name, I think.
Well, and I think that's exactly it, Pat. I mean, you and I are both parents. We will say the most important individual in a child's life is their parent. That is never the argument. It is more when you are going after these very just non, like book banning and not teaching our history. Whether it is about things even as extreme as like the Civil War or Japanese internment camps. I mean, if we don't learn history, we're going to be condemned to repeat it. And yet this is exactly what these groups are really digging in on. And that is something that to me, we want to make sure we elevate. And school boards matter. School boards are directing everything from whether it is who they are hiring to the curriculum that sometimes these schools are teaching and can be engaged in that. And so we know politics are local. And I think this is another way of seeing we can't just not be involved in these races.
Mm-hmm. So now will your group, Women Win Wisconsin, will that still have a kind of an online presence, or will it be mostly your activities over the next, you know, weeks and months beyond?
Well, that's exactly what we're figuring out, is what is the best way for us to be engaged, whether it is from an organizing online or in person. And we are focusing in and want to focus in on potentially these school board races. Mm-hmm. There's also a special election with the Supreme Court, SDA, right, and Jody Habesh Sinkin is running. And we could then get back The veto power in the Senate, currently we have lost that. Mm-hmm. So that's really important. And I know you have also talked about it a lot, but the Supreme Court is critical. And so we want to be playing in on these kind of three areas of races.
We are so looking forward to talking to you every couple of weeks or so about these and so many other topics. Sarah Godlewski, congrats on the new chapter. So great to talk to you. Have a wonderful day.
Well, thanks, Pat. And what a great way to do it. So enjoy the rest of it.
We appreciate it so much. Todd Albo joins us next. You're up north. All right, so tomorrow we'll have Hometown Health with Dr. Kristen Lyerly. We will also have a guest warning us about so-called pregnancy crisis centers. So that and more coming up on Thursday's edition of Up North News Radio. But as we often do on Wednesdays, we wrap things up with a little visit with Todd Albo of the coincidentally named Todd Albo Show, which comes up next on many of these fine civic media radio stations. And I started during the commercial break by just wanting to kid Todd because he was sick throughout most of December. So I said something along the lines of, you know, are you done being sick? And a voice I did not recognize answered back like, I'm not done being sick yet. So what's up with that, Todd?
I heard you have a doctor or something. I needed a doctor or a health segment here a while back, but no, I had avoided it until this last month in December, and then came down with COVID, took about 2 weeks to test negative, and then once I tested negative, I started feeling worse, and it turns out I got a sinus infection on top of the COVID. Ugh. So I'm on, you know, antibiotic, and I looked at my pills I take now in the morning, and I felt like my late 96-year-old grandmother. It's like a dozen pills out there I'm taking.
So, oh my gosh.
Yes, I know. It's exactly the way I feel in the morning. But I'm standing upright, so I'm thankful. I'm just, my voice isn't quite back and all that sort of thing, but I'm here.
I was gonna say, you know, the old line, right side of the dirt. You
That's
know,
right.
We're there. So that part is good. So I almost feel guilty asking if you had a good holiday season, but I hope there were some high moments involved there.
I spent most of the holidays alone, as it turns out, because I didn't want to spread this the COVID, especially. I didn't test negative on COVID until after Christmas. So I made a quick trip to Richland Center to drop off a couple of gifts to my mom, and she had some food packed up for me, and I said hi to my sister and her family, and I came right back to Madison. So, and New Year's Eve, I spent listening to Those Were the Days on WRCO and the Triviathon, and so just kind of chilled out. But you know what it does, Pat? It gives you an opportunity for a little solace to think about what's really important, and that is I had a warm place to be during that cold weather. I had food to eat. I had electricity. And there's a lot of folks out there that would give anything to spend the holidays like that instead of where they spend their holidays. So I was thankful.
Kier, I thought you were going to say, being alone like this, you finally had time to write the great American novel, which is all that thing we all promise we're going to do, right? But we never do.
I wish, but no.
I think about that every time I'm in an airport, and I traveled a couple of different times in the past month here. So being in multiple airports, yeah. You go into the little gift shops that they have, and they have, you know, a book section, and there is such an endless supply of what I would call small books. I mean, we all know the big books, you know, that, you know, a John Grisham would write or something like that. But there's all these other books that are kind of smaller paperback about all sorts of things. And I look at that sometimes and I go, man, I ought to write one of these. It's like anybody can get a book published. I've got some ideas, but then when you sit down to do it, it's not as easy as it sounds.
But you have some great experience. I mean, all the different things you've done in your life, and you know, all the things you've seen, people you've interviewed, experiences you've had in the legislature, you could write a book.
I could, and one of these days I tried briefly for a spell, and then realized
really?
I'm much better at talking about these things than writing about them, but I will work on it. Now I've got Aaron to maybe help me as like a ghostwriter co-author.
There you go.
We'll see. But I mean, yeah, maybe I was going to say that maybe you need somebody to dictate or like take your words down. But now that you say that, I probably just signed myself up for that.
poor Aaron, his text messages are just going to blow up now with, you know, with verbatims from me going, you know, chapter two, and then go on and talk about my years in college radio, because that's what people want to hear about. But
why not?
As we turn the calendar and move into a new year, one thing I wanted to bounce off you, and I don't know if you shared it yesterday or not, but we have been talking forever about Fred Prehn, the squatter on the DNR board, a Scott Walker appointee who refused to leave. Well, in case you missed it while we were on break, Fred Prehn has finally said that he's stepping down from the Natural Resources Board. But now we learn that three holdovers on the Wisconsin Technical College Board have now stepped down 20 months after their terms expired. It's basically all the Scott Walker holdouts who were hoping Tony Evers would lose understand that that didn't happen, and they can go now. But, you know, Todd, the game playing never should have gotten to this point.
It's something I've never seen. I mean, in my, you know, 30-ish years in politics in Wisconsin, I've never seen anything like this. The fact that, I think you mentioned it before in your show, whether it was Lee Sherman-Dreyfus or Tommy Thompson on the Republican side, or Tony Earle or Jim Doyle on the Democratic side, if you lose, you lose. And that's it. And you move on. And this somehow, these new rules by Republicans in the current state legislature that, no, we're just not going to leave. No, the election didn't happen, or we're going to create our own result. And I think you guys talked about it yesterday with Andrew Hitt and Mark Jefferson and these guys, you know, involved in the, you know, with Ron Johnson post 2020 election. I mean, this new attitude of we'll just ignore what the people have done and do our own thing, it's bizarro. And I think you just hit the nail on the head, though, Pat. Maybe they figured out, oh, geez, I guess that wasn't an anomaly. I guess we're going to have to be with these people for four more years. I guess we'll finally have to acquiesce to what the people wanted.
I just don't understand how it's legal, honestly. It's like, if I work at Civic Media, you know, I unlock the building in the morning. If they're like, you know, Aaron, you're fired now. And I'm like, you know what? No, I think I'm just going to keep my key and keep coming here and starting the show every morning.
Right.
Or I just won't. Right. I'll keep the key and not let anyone else in and just not do anything.
It just seems like a hangover from the Trump authoritarianism, you know, spirit that was out there, that people were thinking, well, I guess through sheer force of will, you know, the rules don't apply. If I want to stay in office, if I want to stay in power, well, I just stay. And if I've got powerful people, in this case, the state Supreme Court, you know, backing me up, well, you know, what are you going to do about it? And I do think it's almost like a fever has broken of Trumpism, where they understand he didn't succeed in becoming a strong man, and that these Walker appointees are realizing, you know, I'm not doing what the good conscience on my one shoulder would do. I need to stop listening to the orange-haired bad conscience on my other shoulder.
It's going to be interesting, this new legislative session, to see if they can actually get something done now. As you said, maybe the fever is broken. Maybe they're kind of coming to their senses. I don't know. I hope so. That would be good for the people of Wisconsin. We have a biennial budget coming up this session. Something has to get done.
I would hope so. Again, with well over 100 appointees who still have not been confirmed by the state Senate, and Devin LeMahieu, the Senate Republican leader, saying, well, we're going to start the process for them, blah, blah, blah. You know, how about you just get it done? How about you just do your job? Anyway, we'll have more to say about that. Anything special you want to talk about from your show coming up?
Well,
next?
The first couple of minutes is going to be Pat Kreitlow from Up North News.
I've heard of him.
And,
good guy.
And absolutely. And then at about 8:15, we're going to have Trigby Olson from the Lincoln Project talking about the big House Speaker race out in D.C. and his behind-the-curtain view of what's going on in D.C. and who might be the next Speaker of the House.
All right, you can hear Todd coming up next on Richland Center, Wausau, Amory, along the Civic Media Radio Network. Waukesha and Oshkosh, you got Earl Ingram coming up next, Madison Stephanie Miller. I'm Pat Kreitlow. We'll see you back here 6 a.m. tomorrow.